Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of In the Barn. I'm Robin.
And I'm Kelsey. And in today's episode, we are going to address some social media rumors and break down some frequently referred to research that is used to justify the proper age to start a young horse. So yeah, welcome back. Welcome to 2022. I feel like I'm going to mess up saying 2022 all the time because it's just too many twos.
Yeah, I don't like saying 2022. Like 2020, you know, it rolled off the tongue a little bit. 2021, nice and smooth. 2022.
So yeah, welcome back. Happy 2022. We meant to have this episode out sooner, but we had an audio glitch. So we're here now trying again for round two. So wish us luck. But that's what happens when you're not professionals and you don't have professional equipment. You're just too... Two kiddos at their... I'm at my dining room table today. I don't know where you are.
I'm in my back room watching my pony yawn out the window. Also, sorry, this is going to be a quick detour. I just noticed Fletch likes to play with the electric fence. What is in miniature's blood that makes them so immune to electric fences? And like he will stand there and he'll bump it with his nose and like he plays to see if like I think if he can touch it without getting shot.
Maybe he just has like thrill seeking, like he's just like a thrill seeker and just wants to live life on the edge and just like, oh, am I gonna get shocked? Whoa, you know, like, you know, it's kind of like skydiving, you know, is my parachute gonna open? Am I gonna get shocked? I think it might be the same for Fletch.
Yes, well, he's been playing with the electric fence lately and I don't know what to think about it. He's scaring me a little bit because I'm like, if you're tough enough just to, you know, walk up to the electric fence with no fear, what else are you brave enough to do?
Yeah, my horses are not brave enough of the electric fence, and I don't think any of them even know what an electric fence is, but they understand.
So young horses, let's talk about this.
So I just kind of wanted, before we dive into the episode, I just wanted to talk about why we chose this topic.
Yes,
because I think there's some good reasons out there and why this episode is focused the way it is, because when you talk about young horses, there is so much research actually on this topic. It's one of the few topics that I think the research community is actually really interested in, regardless of what side of the fence they're on, whether it's start them young or start them older, regardless of their opinion. I think there's a lot of research out there. But for this episode and specifically, we really wanted to look at some of that social media mess that gets passed around, whether it's
yes.
posts or pictures or links to articles or snippets of articles. We kind of want to dive into what are some of the frequently shared social media myths and information and explain a little bit more behind them, because I think the problem with social media is it is just like copied and pasted talking points, and you are just like copying and pasting what someone else copied and pasted that they copied and pasted, and by the time it actually circles around to you, I feel like that information is so watered down and so confusing and so convoluted that it's not even what they're rich. It's like a game of telephone on social media,
but like a really bad one. And it's instead of like a game of telephone where you're hearing something, it's as long as like it has an image that's easily understood,
yeah,
then that gets passed along. Like if you can break it down easily, people will believe it, or if it's like a color-coded image, people will believe it, but it's not always accurate. And this is definitely one of those topics that is always debated, especially with in recent years. I guess not super recent years, but we didn't used to have like young event horse classes. We didn't used to have like young dressage horse classes that encourage the starting of young horses and like fleshing out their talent as two-year-olds. That it's one of those topics that is so heavily debated with so much misinformation about it.
And I can see why when I go through the research and we'll talk about it. This is one of the times when I think it's really, really important to not just read the summary, but to read the actual study if available to you.
Yes.
Because a lot of these, all of this research seems to be conducted in a way that we know what our answer is, or we know what answer we want to find. Let's present it in that way and let's figure out how we're going to get into it. But there are studies that, yes, that's absolutely the conclusion. However, that's not the reason for the conclusion. And so the information's really sort of misleading. Definitely, like, going through this research, like, the theme of this episode is going to be, are they crazy or is Kelsey stupid? Because I have, like, there's so many things that I'm like, I don't understand. Something's wrong. Something's not adding up here. I have I have a few crazy theories or stupid theories, which we'll get to. But Yeah, it's an interesting topic.
A lot of these studies, I think we can all agree, right? A horse is a moving part. There's a lot going on to the horse. The vertebrae in their neck, you have their spine, you have their legs, their knees, their hocks. So many of these young horse studies that you see referenced or constantly pushed to like sway you one way or another on starting young horses only look at the legs. And I'm pretty sure there's more to a horse than just their legs. Actually, scratch that. They only look at like the front legs.
Actually, I found in one of my studies the answer as to why.
Oh.
So I could answer that question as to, because yeah, most of the studies look at a very specific bone or set of bones in the front leg. And I think I can answer why.
Ooh, can you share that now or do we have to wait?
I don't know. I wasn't prepared to share it now, but like I could share it now.
Okay. We'll wait.
Okay. Yeah. It's just like it's in my notes and there's like a flow. We got to like go through the flow to get there.
Okay. So start us off then. Take us down this rabbit hole.
The other reason for addressing this is because yes, we are podcasters. We are, and not like professional podcasters. We are just like kids with microphones and a couple ponies in the backyard. We are not professionals by any means, but we do have access to a lot of the same information. And this is one of the times where I find it really frustrating that veterinarians who have, like, they have a very important certificate. They have a lot of education and they are very important members of our community, can sometimes be a little flippant with this discussion. And they have access to the same information I have access to. And that throws me. So for example, the podcast Straight from the Horse Doctor's Mouth, which is done by Dr. Latcher. She also has a blog on her Spring Hill Equine page. I normally really love her. I love her podcast. I think she's a really no-nonsense person. And her approach to horses is very much less is more, which I agree with. You know, we don't need all these fancy therapies and all of these supplements to have a happy, healthy horse. They need turnout. They need good food. They need, you know, light. They need all of those things. And I really agree with that. I think she's really on to something. However, she recently, I think this was a few weeks ago, did an episode called The Young Horse Myth, and she has a subsequent blog post to go with it. And it is almost to the point where she's making fun of people who want to wait till their horses are older to ride. People who do not want to ride and work their two-year-olds relatively hard, she almost is making fun of. She's very flippant, very dismissive. And it's really like disheartening to see that or hear that from a vet, because she has access to the same information I have. She quotes a lot of the studies I'm going to talk about, but almost as if she didn't read them or didn't fully understand them. And she's just copying and pasting someone else's point. And it's just really unfortunate to see, because she is someone who I do really actually respect and really like her opinion most of the time. And I'm not upset with her conclusion. I'm upset with how she presents it in such a like lighthearted, almost jokingly manner. And it's really upsetting. So, or just like, it's frustrating, because then you have a lot of people in the lay community who are not vets are saying, wait. And it's so easy to dismiss people in the general horse world because they don't have a veterinarian credential.
Right. It's very easy for someone to simply not necessarily listen to the information we share, but to simply discredit us from the get-go because we are not vets, which, fair enough, you know, take everything anyone says with a grain of salt. But if we are reading the same research studies, reading the same information available, it's very hard, because someone will choose to listen or believe a vet over us when we are all reading the same studies that you could go out and read yourself, which we highly encourage. We link all our research studies in our descriptions. We provide all the resources we use. That way you can go and read them and come to your own conclusions. Yes. And I encourage you to do so. That way you're not just taking our word at face value.
Yeah. And I do want to also state that, like, I don't care if you start your horse at 2 or 4 or 6 or 10 or 20. It's just taking that information and truly understanding what it's saying, because at the end of the day, there's risk and rewards, I think, no matter when you start your horse. And you just have to weigh those outcomes and you have to understand what those potential consequences are.
Pretty much.
And sometimes they're going to be greater at a certain age and not at other ages. So with that lengthy introduction, let's get into it. So the first place I am going to start with an image that gets shared on Facebook quite frequently. I've seen it shared quite a lot.
I've seen it all over the place.
It is a picture of a horse. It's a skeleton horse. It's a nice little drawing. And its bones are like rainbow colored, color coordinated, starting at red in the hoofs, kind of going pink, orange, green, blue, and purple in the spine. This image is titled The Stages of Equine Skeletal Development. And it has on the left-hand side, like the little rainbow colors of what color corresponds with what year or what age a horse is, I guess, considered skeletally developed off of this image. It doesn't really say what it's showing other than like skeletal development. And then in the right-hand corner at the top, you'll see that there's a little at symbol for Equinaomi. There's a couple different versions of this image with her name on it. Equinaomi or Naomi Tavin is an Italian trainer. She does bitless show jumping and dressage. She seems really awesome. She's very much a like advocate for the horse and doing things in a lighter, less dramatic way and kind of anti sort of modern dressage, and puts out a lot of information about that. So she does sort of claim this image as hers. And doing a little bit of research, I found that in 2019 is when this image really started being pushed by her. And that's because it was released as part of an article in an Italian horse magazine. They had a whole article interviewing her, and this image was included. Unfortunately, I can't read it. My Italian's not very good.
You don't know Italian?
I don't know Italian. But she does claim in a lot of her source information on her Facebook page, as well as a lot of the images, that this information is based off of Deb Bennett's work. And we will get into who Deb Bennett is and what her work is in just a second. But this image, I think, is the one that's used to justify most often why you should wait to start a young horse. So
yeah.
The reason being is like the spine in this image is colored purple, and then there's pieces that are tan, and that is indicating that the spine's not done growing until they're 6 years old or maybe later. Or again, this image isn't super clear what it's showing. It says skeletal development, so I mean, we kind of can guess what it's saying. I mean, do you have any guesses at what this image is trying to convey?
No, but I always see it, and I see it shared as like, they'll zoom in on one part of the skeleton and be like, this is why I wait to start my horses till 4 or 6 or
yeah.
However, whatever age they've picked. And it's always like, oh, I mean, sure, I can see that that's colored yellow. I can see you have an age number on it. It seems believable.
Yeah. So this goal of this image is to try to convey when the growth plates in those bones are done growing, or when those bones are done growing. So do you know how many growth plates a horse has in their body? How many growth plates are in their body?
No, that's a negative, Ghost Rider.
It's going to be at least 1 to 2 per bone. Most bones have 2.
Oh my God. I thought you were going to say 1 to 2 total. And I was like, that is not the number I was going to guess.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it's a guess that a lot of people have, because a lot of people, and I think I was under this belief for a long time, is that the only growth plates that either really matter, which we'll discuss, that the research covers, are those of the knee. I remember for such a long time that I was like, oh, if I have a young horse, I have to make sure we check its knees, that its knees are closed before I ride it. That actually like means nothing, but also kind of means something, but means nothing at the same time, because their knees don't close and you're not looking at their knees, you're looking at something else. Anyways, this image is all about showing growth plates. So I found a book on my shelf, I love when this happens, called Equine Science, Health, and Performance by Zoe Davis and Sarah Pilner. And this was first published in 1991. And it is an awesome book that kind of really simply breaks down a horse's, their skeleton, the muscles, their digestive system, kind of breaks down all the horse science. And it is information packed. I learned so much in just a few pages, and it's really easy to understand. So I highly recommend it. If it's already on your bookshelf, go and read it or go and find it. But they talk about what a growth plate is. So in the simplest terms, a growth plate is the location that the bone grows from, and that it's being typically converted from cartilage to bone. This growth plate that we talk about most often, we're talking about growth plates in the long bones. And long bones are those that are in the appendicular skeleton, the arms, the appendages, the arms and the legs. Yes, there's long bones throughout the rest of the body, but those are the most common ones we're talking about. And long bones are designed to be support columns and designed to be leveraged to move the horse or the animal or the human around. So how it works is that as a fetus is developing inside its mom, as it's in utero, it starts as a cartilage blob, and that cartilage gets more and more defined into bone shapes and little legs and little backs and little necks and heads and things.
The technical terms.
Those are, yeah, technical, little legs and little things. So as that cartilage cartilage is developing, these little cells called osteoblasts will basically invade them. In the center, those osteoblasts go into the center of that cartilage and they start converting that cartilage into a salt matrix. And that salt matrix is known as calcification. So osteoblasts go into the center of the bone and they kind of start from the center and work their way up and down to convert that new cartilage to bone. And as that horse grows in utero, some of those bones are going to finish before the horse is born, and some of those bones, the majority of them, are going to finish that conversion once they're out and on the ground. And basically what's happening is new cartilage is getting laid down in order to give that bone length, and then those osteoblasts are like rapidly turning it over into calcium.
Okay.
There's also two ways in which bones grow. That's the most common way. The skull grows in a totally different way, where it kind of like the exterior of the skull bone just starts to harden. I mean, it doesn't usually have that same level of it doesn't have cartilage being converted. It's sort of it's a different process. And then bones also grow wider. So when a bone is growing wider, it doesn't have a growth plate. When a bone gets wider, it's essentially those salt matrix are getting layered around it like a tree. It's very similar to how a tree grows in rings. The bone will grow in rings as well. And that width of the bone is going to be really affected by that horse's environment and the process, you know, how much pressure, how much impact, certain things like that are going to trigger how that bone develops. So it's common for certain bones, you know, if the wear and tear isn't equal, you may see bones getting thicker on one side of a horse or an animal because they're responding to that weight and to those muscles. So what does it mean to close? So the process of closing or growth plate closing is essentially that no new cartilage is being laid and no cartilage is further being converted to bone. So when you look at an x-ray of a horse that you're looking at the growth plates, it's kind of pretty easy, and I read an article that described what it looked like, but essentially a bone is a lot denser than cartilage, and you can see in those x-rays that density is continued all the way to the top or the bottom of the bone, and you should be able in those x-rays to kind of see a line in the bone, and that line is either like fused or it's still open in some way. So it's essentially that no new cartilage is being created and no more bone is being converted over. It's again just really focused on the length of the bone and not the width, because the width doesn't develop from a growth plate that can be easily seen like that. We also know that closure rates are going to start at the bottom of both the horse. So you're going to go hoof bones, coffin bones, up past through the pastern, cannon bone, up above the knee to like the elbow. All of that's going to happen bottom up, south end of the horse first, because right, that's what's carrying the most pressure and weight of the horse. And so it's going to stop growing sooner. And this bones are also similar, where the bottom end of the bone is going to stop growing sooner than the top end of the bone. The other thing is we know that this is controlled a lot by the sex hormones. So for whatever reason, mares and geldings or colts and fillies do this at a little bit different rate. Colts tend to be a little bit slower, and it's their sex hormones that are triggering how long a bone should be, how short it should be. The timeline for closing, which is what that image is trying to say, is hard to nail down like a good source. So I did find a source, which is Deb Bennett's, and we'll talk about it. But most sources are really kind of vague on specific timelines for when those bones are going to be done growing. But some of the information I did find from Deb Bennett's article does say things like, you know, a cannon bone may be done growing at a year and a half, but it may be still adding width to that bone until that horse is 5 years old. So it's really hard when you look at those images, those color coordinated images, to really understand when that bone is done developing just based off that image alone.
Right, because those images present it as like that bone is done growing by the time that horse is two. Like it's done. No more is happening to it.
Yeah, and that's not exactly true. And I think we all totally forget about width, that there is like, I mean, that's with like Hudson even. I remember like looking at him last fall or summer, the summer, and being like, he's never going to be tall enough for me to ride. Like this horse is never going to be big enough. But now he's not grown any taller, but he suddenly looks big enough for me to ride because he has filled out and he's added a lot more muscle and a lot more density to his body without growing taller necessarily. And that's the same thing with bones, is that they are going to still add some of that thickness and density as the horse continues to grow.
Right. And we've all seen those gangly 3-year-olds that are like the width of a 2x4. But, you know, once they mature and get to like 8 years old, they look significantly more filled out.
Yeah. And before I forget this, because I'll forget it, but I won't. Maybe I won't. It's important when we think about when bones are developing that we also have to remember a lot of those bones are developing and they're also anchoring things like tendons and ligaments and muscles. And that if that bone hasn't fully developed, if you're developing muscles and tendons and ligaments that don't have a strong anchor or an anchor that's still growing, there is a potential for issues there. One of the big issues with working young horses or horses that haven't finished growing is you do have a potential to damage that cartilage as it's being created. And that cartilage can swell and it can cause sort of irregular growth to those bones. The other big impact to cartilage development and bone growth and growth plates is nutrition. Nutrition's huge to horses and is really important that it's managed appropriately in order to prevent a lot of diseases. As far as studies into growth plates go, finding them was rather challenging, but once I found one, I was able to find references to a bunch of others. But this is one that's commonly referred to. This is a 2011 study that was published in Livestock Science, and it's called The Effect of Horse Breed and Sex on Growth Rate in Radiographic Closure of the Distal Radial Metaphyseal Growth Plate. So the distal radial, that is going to be the bottom end of the horse's radius, the bone just above the knee. So we're not actually looking at the knee. We're looking at the growth plate of the radius that's just above the knee. And then that metaphyseal, that's the bottom growth plate. And the metaphyseal end of a bone is the where it gets a little bit wider. It tends to be a little bit more narrow at the top and a little bit wider at the bottom. And that just has to do with pressure and being able to support the horse. So the aim of this study was to look at the effects of different breeds, growth rates on different breeds, as well as on different genders. So this study had 81 animals in it, or 81 horses. They had Thoroughbreds, Arabians, Anglo-Arabs, which is a thoroughbred Arab cross, and a Huckle, which is the wild pony in Ukraine and Romania.
Oh.
I believe this study was conducted in Poland, which I have a lot of Polish studies in here, or not a lot, but several Polish studies. So Poland seems to be doing a lot of research into young horses and thoroughbreds. And when I say Poland, Warsaw is the capital of Poland, right?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Don't ask me.
I'm pretty sure it is. I meant to Google this earlier.
I don't know. My geography is awful.
Well, first I was like, it's in Russia. How weird. Russia doing studies. And then I was like, wait, I don't think Warsaw is in Russia. I'm pretty sure it's the capital of Poland.
Yeah, let me look it up real quick.
It is. Ooh, it is. Yeah, Warsaw's the capital of Poland. Kelsey knows a little bit about geography because in the fifth grade, I did a report on Poland, yo.
Wow. I did a report on Honduras in the fifth grade.
Well, what's its capital?
I don't know, but they had a really high murder rate.
Oh, great. Actually, I bet if you said it, I would totally know. Honduras seems like, is it the capital of Honduras, Honduras?
I don't know. What in this conversation made you think I knew the capital of Honduras?
Honduras capital. Oh, no, I would never have guessed this name. It's Tegucigalpa.
Don't hurt yourself.
Okay, back to my study. So we had four groups of four different breeds, and in each group there was 20 horses. About half were colts and about half were fillies. So what they did for these horses is they took a couple different measurements. They measured at birth and at 20 months and then at each month after 20 months. They took a radiographic image of the distal radial metaphyseal growth plate, which according to Google is the bottom of the radius, the growth plate at the bottom of the radius, okay? This is going to be important because we're going to come back to this in many different research, and nobody has the same. The research all says the same thing, but all the other sources say different things. So, I am sure I know what this is. I Googled it, and it's a common place for fractures, okay? But no one calls it the same thing.
What is the most common terms we would know it called as?
Bottom of the radius.
Yeah, but radius?
Just above the knee.
Oh, okay. I know I'm not the only one that was just confused.
Well, the radius is the bone above the knee. That's what I'm...
Okay. Glad we got that smoothed out.
Anyway, so they took radiographs at 20 months and then each month after that. And then they took a bunch of measurements like height, girth, width, things like that of the horses at full, at 20 months, and then each month after that. And their goal was to take radiographs until they saw that that growth plate was closed in at those in the x-rays. So when they did this, they found that thoroughbred and Arab breeds significantly grew faster their first 0 to 20 month span. They grew in more height and more width than the crossbreed, which the Anglo-Arab and the wild pony. I'm just going to call it a wild pony because I don't know what a huckle. I looked at pictures, but I'm so done with saying words I don't know.
That's fair.
Anyways, we're calling it a wild pony. All horses were weaned at 6 months. All horses were kept in like paddocks and had pasture turnout except for the thoroughbreds. It's important to note that the thoroughbreds Brits that were part of this study went at 6 months went into box stalls, and then at 18 months they were transferred to the track to start their racing career. So the thoroughbreds were not necessarily like, they had other variables that were affecting them, such as training and a different diet than the other breeds. The other breeds were kept in similar situations at a similar farm. And so there is potential that that had some influence on the growth plates of these thoroughbreds. The researchers do say that in future studies, all horses should be treated equal and that the thoroughbreds could be affected plus or minus in either the direction. They don't know if they overestimated or underestimated based off the information.
Okay.
So interestingly, in the first 20 months, thoroughbreds grew tallest the fastest and Arabs grew widest the fastest. And specifically, fillies and Arabs tended to get fatter or wider faster, and colts and thoroughbreds tended to get taller faster. I don't know what that means. I just think it's interesting that Arabs got fat faster. This study was a little bit annoying because they did not really break down the information into individuals, and I would have loved to have seen individuals. It's 80 horses, but like you could have easily put that into tables where I could see when each individual horse closed their growth plates, because when we take averages, you know that when you take an average, that means that there's horses that fell out of that average, either above or below, and it could be a lot, it could be a little, we just don't know. When they looked at those, that growth plate and determined closure, they found that Arabs closed the soonest. So they closed, and I'm going to do this in months, but they also do it in days, but days is too confusing. So they found that the Arab horse, on average, colts and fillies, closed at 23.6 months. However, they found that fillies closed at 22 months and colts closed at 24 months. So there is about a 2 month difference between Arab fillies and Arab colts. For the wild ponies, they found that they closed on average at 26 months. The colts were about 26.7 months and the fillies were about 25.4 months. So about a month difference between fillies and colts, which this is really interesting. Pay attention to this because this will often come back when you're reading literature and reading not research-based studies or not research-based information. Good information, just not based off of a study or not a study. So Anglo-Arabs, they closed around 26.6 months, fillies about 26, and colts about 27 months. Thoroughbreds were closed in the average as well, about 24 months was on average for thoroughbreds. Fillies, 22 months, colts, 27.
Oh.
So that's a pretty big difference. That's a 5 month difference. And what's really interesting,
thoroughbreds have the biggest difference.
They do. And when I read this book, The Equine Science, Health and Performance, they say that colts are about 6 months behind fillies. So does that image in Deb Bennett's work also says colts are about 6 months behind fillies. And you'll find a lot of information out there that says colts are 6 months. Well, when we look at that information in this study, I would say, well, thoroughbreds are maybe a 6 month difference, but everyone else really is a 1 to 2 month difference. And so that's why when we look at the study, you're going to find a lot of times people saying there's not a statistical difference, right? That when we run that equation, when we run whatever statistical equation we're going to use, there doesn't tend to be that big of a difference. All those breeds, when you take their averages, it's a 3 month difference. But when you look at them broken down into colts and fillies, you actually get up to like a 5 month difference, not just between thoroughbreds, but also between Arabs as well and thoroughbreds. I think 5 months starts to matter. And in fact, this study quoted, summarized a bunch of other research that looked at the same growth plate and other breeds and found similar information. So I'm not going to quote every study that they found or give you what every study is, the name of every study.
Please don't.
I'm just going to give you the facts that's in their study. And if you want, go to their study and then you could find the 2011 study and then you could find the rest of the stuff. They found that in Brazilian thoroughbreds that they range between 20 and 27 months. So again, that's probably fillies versus colts.
Yeah.
In thoroughbred quarter horse crosses, appendixes, it's 24 to 25 months. Not a big difference there. Standard breds, 28 months. Again, when this growth plate above the knee is closing. And that's plus or minus 4 months, or another study found it plus or minus 2 months. So two studies both found 28 on average and then plus or minus 4 months. And again, that range, I'm guessing, is for the outliers as well as probably for fillies. So we're looking at Brazilian thoroughbreds at 20 months, standardbreds at 28 months. 8 months is a huge difference. But a lot of research isn't looking at breed-on-breed differences. And when they run a statistical analysis, in the grand scheme, that's still 2 years. And so 2 years, at the horse's average age is 2 years, those statistical equations are coming up, but there's not a big significant difference. But to me, 8 months is a big difference.
But it's also 2 years for just one growth plate is all they're looking at.
And remember, that bone has two growth plates.
Yeah.
And they're just looking at the bottom, which
was going to develop first.
Yeah.
Oh, how frustrating.
Super frustrating. So I think that's really interesting. There's also another study that shows that Icelandics are actually closer, Icelandic ponies are closer to 36 months. So they're going to be 3 years when that bone closes, that growth plate closes.
Which isn't that different from what we're always told, is that we're always told like bigger horses will develop later. But I know an Icelandic pony is not the largest horse out there.
No. So the theory with ponies is that they're going to grow slower because they have adapted not to get OCD lesions, essentially. The slower rate of growth puts less pressure on the cartilage, and because of that, it allows for the cartilage to develop undamaged, essentially.
Oh.
OCD lesions are not common in ponies or wild horses. They're really common in warm bloods that we want to grow bigger, faster, quicker. It's a lot of times linked as a genetic disease as well. So
oh.
I think that's really interesting. And a lot of times these ponies are growing up in harsher climates, so it's advantageous to grow slower because you just don't have the same resources and nutrition available to you. Which, keep that in mind because that's important, guys. That's going to come back later. I hope you all take notes.
All of it's going to come back later.
So that's the takeaway of when distal radius metaphyseal growth plate closes, right? The bottom of the radius. So why do so many studies use this growth plate? One of the reasons being is that that ossification, the closure of that growth plate, is linked to when the horse hits about 90% of its growth height. So, right, we know that by 2 years old, most horses are about 90% the height they're going to be. They've got a little few more inches to finish growing over the next couple years. And because that closes at about the same rate the horse hits that height, there's this assumed connection. There's this assumed, none of the research proved that these two things were related. All it proved was that these two things happen at the same time. So I thought that was really interesting that that's what we're relying on, and yet we've not been able to demonstrate that these are connected. The other reason we look at this bone is because, and this is a quote from the study, in the case that a single growth plate must be used, authors have thus far not agreed on which equid growth plate is the most appropriate marker for maturation rate. Due to limited access to growth plates in the upper parts of the limb, the distal radial metaphyseal growth plate is most often used for radiographic evaluation of the maturation stage of horse bones. It's easy to x-ray. That's the only reason. It's the highest one up that's easy to x-ray.
That's annoying.
And there's no consensus that that means anything. So it's these two things happen at the same time where the horse is almost done growing and this growth plate closes. But we actually have no idea if they're connected. No one's agreed which is the best one. And this is the one we're looking at because it's easy to x-ray.
That's stupid.
I know.
Aw, man. I was hoping there was going to be like so much better of an explanation for why we only look at that one part of the horse's legs.
Yeah, no, me too.
Why? That's so dumb.
But I mean, horses are big. They're big, bulky, clunky creatures.
Yeah, I get it.
No one wants to x-ray the hind leg. Like, that's just a pain in the butt. It's a pain in the butt to get x-rays set up, to get the equipment. We know we can x-ray other parts. Just doing that is a challenge. And to do it for 80 horses is an extra challenge. And so to make sure that I think we are consistent, we know we can consistently get good images of the front leg repeatedly.
Yeah, I get it. And we're not the ones paying for these studies and they're expensive. But being the person on the consumer end of these studies, I want to see more.
Definitely. So back to Naomi and her image, right?
The color-coded image.
That color-coded image. So like I said, her image is based off of Deb Bennett's work. She links on her Facebook page, Naomi links to one of Deb Bennett's articles that is titled Timing and Rate of Skeletal Maturation in Horses with Comments on Starting Young Horses and the State of the Industry. This is a 2008 study. She's rewritten it a couple times. But essentially, the first part of the study is kind of a critique on the thoroughbred racing industry and why, you know, there's so much wastage in this industry. And the second half is looking at this horse named Ranger, who is a 2-year-old saddlebred horse, and she has some image confirmation images, and she does an assessment of why this 2-year-old isn't ready to ride yet. And her assessment is essentially, you know, he is eunuched, he doesn't have a developed top line, you know, you're going to be in an uphill battle trying to ride this horse, develop a top line. You could just let him grow a little bit longer and you'll find it much easier if he could develop some of this muscle on his own without you interfering.
Yeah.
But who is Deb Bennett? Because I kind of think this might be a key to some of this. So Deb Bennett in 1994 got her PhD in vertebra paleontology. So she is a paleontologist located in the United States. She worked at the University of Kansas. She is also a scientific illustrator for the University of Kansas's Museum of Natural History. She has worked for the U.S. Department of Education in giving grants and has also had a column in Equus, the Equus magazine. She worked for DreamWorks Animation on the Spirit movie.
What?
Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron, in order to, like, ensure that the horse was moving correctly and was animated correctly.
No, wait, that's actually really cool. That's probably, out of all the facts you just shared about her, that was probably the coolest one.
But she founded in 1992 the Equine Studies Institute, which is where this article was published. This article was not published in a, like, journal or on a other website. It was published on her own website. But from 2005 to 2013, she worked as a zooarchaeologist, identifying bones in different World Heritage sites in northeastern England that dates back to the Roman era. So she's essentially like the Temperance Brennan of horse bones. She is an archaeologist that has to identify different vertebras as well as horses in these different dig sites.
That's kind of really cool.
That is really cool. And it means that, you know, growth plates are going to be used to age the horse. So she's probably got a lot of information on when these different growth plates are going to close. She does blame a lot of the thoroughbred wastage on horses not being skeletally developed. She links it to their spines not being fully developed because we know that those develop later. And that since the spine is what suspends so much of the horse and carries so much of the horse, that things like trips and falls and just balance in general is going to be a challenge for a horse that's not fully mature in the spine. So that's her sort of working theory, and that not riding a horse early leads to this saddleback, essentially, which is sway back, which I think, you know, there may be something there. Her article doesn't really do anything other than to use some anecdotal evidence as to why. It's not a research-based article, so I do find that a little bit lacking. She does have a couple tables in there that break down the different bones in a horse and when they're skeletally mature. And this is the article that Naomi says her picture is based off of. So, is this image correct? Drum roll. The answer is kind of, but it's super complicated and not really.
Okay, so that was a terrible conclusion on the image. Very unsatisfying.
I mean, that's all things horses, though. When have we ever got to the end of an episode and been like, well, that was clear. Yep, I totally know the answer.
It's all a bunch of gray area.
It's all gray area. So the challenge, as I mentioned with bones, is they don't fuse all at once, right? They fuse at different times. You have bottom growth plate, you have the top growth plate. You also then have ridges that a lot of these bones have and muscle anchor points that are gonna fuse at different times. And then this image also just doesn't match the table. So for example, if you're looking at this image, you'll see that the radius is a bright green and that corresponds with 3 years of age. But if I go to the table that she provides, Deb Bennett provides, it says that the radius, the proximal epiphyse, which is the top, this is where I get real confused on this bone specifically, fuses at 15 to 18 months. But the bottom, which we just looked at all that research for, says it fuses 3 to 3.5 years.
Huh.
And to make things even more weird, the Equine Science Health and Performance book I have says that, the lower end of the radius, i.e. just above the knee, fuses at 2.5 years.
Huh.
So we have research that says 2, we have a book that says 2.5, and we have an archaeologist that says 3.5. What if, hear me out, her information that this table is, the image is based off of, is based off of Roman era horses.
Oh.
That had different needs. They were probably a lot smaller, had different, like,
probably more similar to the Icelandic ponies.
Exactly. They'd be more similar to the Icelandic ponies.
Oh, interesting. So not a twist we needed in the story.
But what's crazy is her information is based off of, Deb Bennett says that her information is based off of stuff from the 40s and 60s. Well, the book is based off of information from the 80s and 70s. But the studies are the 2000s. What if we are affecting the age a horse matures at through breeding?
I bet we are. I mean, no, seriously, I bet we are. Because look at, this is not necessarily a comparable example, but look at chickens.
Okay, that is, what?
No, I'm just saying, like, just, you know the effect that breeding has. Like, look at some chickens. They've been bred to develop so quickly that they cannot physically live past a certain point. So what if we are developing these horses because we want our three-year-old horses to look like grown eight-year-olds, and so we are breeding them to kind of show the same attributes?
Okay, to add to that, that 2011 study I talked about, that was the whole point, was to find horses that developed sooner so breeders could make more money.
But are those actually horses that last long?
Not what the study was looking at. And the study wasn't looking at when was the appropriate time to ride the horse.
Well, that's dumb.
But I just thought that was really interesting. But this article, which we'll link to, you can look at the table. There's also a lot of differences between this and the colored image. For example, the scapula in her table in Deb Bennett's information, the bottom of the scapula, the southern end, is fused at 1 year, and then the spinal ridge is fused at 3 years, but the image colors it at 4 years. So there's just, it doesn't really match up with even the information it says it's matching up with. So I don't know. I really honestly don't know. But I'm not as rude and dismissive about it as Dr. Latcher. So before I move on to another topic, this is Dr. Latcher's quote about growth plates from her blog. In general, science calls a horse young if they're still growing to do. For most horses, this occurs around 24 to 26 months. Yep, even you guys over there in Arabian crowd. In fact, in a 2011 study of horse growth plates, the Arabians closed the earliest. Now, there is a study on Icelandic horses showing their growth plates closing a little later at closer to 32 to 36 months. For the purposes of an exercise discussion, unless your horse is an Icelandic horse, things are good at around 2 years of age as far as bones go. You will see many, many memes on the internet regarding time of closure of growth plates in horses. I have no idea where the information for those memes came from. Mine came from peer-reviewed journal articles and textbooks on equine anatomy. I'm a resourceful cat like that. Because, yeah, her cat writes the blogs. But, like, I just shared the study that she's referencing, the 2011 study. I just shared with it. The study does not discuss when it's appropriate to ride the horse. It has nothing to do about exercise. They looked at one growth plate in the horse, one growth plate and one bone. We all know that there's no agreed upon best growth plate, or at least we all do now. They only look at that one because they can x-ray it. Like, horses aren't done growing at 24 to 26 months. Are you saying that a horse is done growing at 2? Because we all know horses grow till they're 5 or 6. Like, I'm just so confused by how, like, dismissive she is of that image and didn't even do any research into it. And she also constantly, and this I think really needs to stop, compares horses to kids. And in the podcast, she talks about how young kids play sports, therefore 2-year-old horses should also play sports. But who would expect, like, that is so different than a professional athlete.
Also,
right? You're not doing the workout of a professional athlete.
Also, I'm sorry, I have knee pain. I've been riding my entire life when I was young and developing. I have, like, horrible knee and ankle pain. Other kids that start off doing sports young in life all have, like, chronic pain from one injury or another that they got when they were younger. I have seen this argument used a lot, is like, if we let kids play and, like, do stuff or, like, you train for sports when they are younger and still developing, why don't we do the same to our horses? But look at how many people or how many athletes have to retire early on because of pain and their bodies just can't keep up.
Also, can I point out that most of those kids that are playing peewee soccer, that is not, like, the goal that they're trying to get to, right? Like, we're not trying to use up that kid in a peewee soccer league.
Yeah.
Theoretically, we're laying the foundation so that they could go on and play professional soccer after college. That's the point of peewee soccer. The peewee soccer isn't to, like, get everything you can out of that kid and work it as hard as possible and make a few dollars. The point is to lay a foundation so, you know, 20 years from now, that kid can still, if they're good enough, be playing professional. That's a totally different goal than horses, I feel like.
Right. Completely different. That's like comparing apples to oranges. It's just not that. I've seen that argument pop up quite a few different times, and that one really frustrates me to no end.
There's actually a 2021 literature review that was released by Chris Rogers, who I have a bone to pick with Chris Rogers. I have one of his studies here as well.
Is it a fully developed bone?
Maybe. No, according to Chris Rogers, it's not. But it is, but it's not. He has a whole literature review that compares human growth markers to horse growth markers and uses that as a justification for starting horses at two again. Like, his whole view on the world is that horses should start at two. And so he uses those human growth markers for horses. But the thing he doesn't really clarify very well is that human growth markers, a lot of those are taken around the size of the spine, and a lot of imaging is done of the spine and your vertebra and those dimensions and measurements. And he kind of glosses over, like, we don't do that with horses, so I'm going to use another number in place of that. That's not the same then. It's not the same. So that is the colored meme image. The colored, that's not a meme, it's just a colored skeleton.
Yeah, meme is a very dismissive term to use in there. It's like a way just to like write it off. It's like, it's just a meme.
It's not a joke. It's based on something. What, I'm not really sure. And I don't want to say it's not Naomi's image, but if it had appeared in a 2019 magazine, I did find it on the internet back in 2016 on someone else's blog. And it doesn't match the article she says it matches. And that's what confuses me the most. So the second thing I want to talk about that gets referenced a lot is what I refer to as the thoroughbred studies. There's one in particular, which is the New Zealand study that is actually done by Chris Rogers and a couple other researchers from New Zealand. And I'm going to kind of go into that one, but I think it's really important to pair this study with one of the Polish thoroughbred studies because they look at the same information, they come to the same conclusion, but for two totally different reasons. So the Polish study is titled The Effect of Selected Factors on Length of Racing Career in Thoroughbred Racehorses in Poland. So the aim of this study was to develop a profile and to examine the factors that affect the length of a racing career. So they had 1,759 thoroughbreds, about half were males, about half were females, that were racing in Poland. These horses were born after 1996, and they raced on tracks between 98 and 2005. Out of those 1,700 horses within the study that first raced as 2 or 3 years old, only 72% raced for 1 year after their first year, 46% raced for 2 years after their first year, and 18% for 3 years.
Not great odds.
Not great odds. There's a lot of wastage in this industry, and it's why there's so much research around it, because a lot of that wastage just is due to injury. So 88% of those horses had their first start as two-year-olds, and then the other 12% didn't race until they were three-year-olds. This is actually higher than in other studies. So there's a study in the UK that found that it's even more horses start at their two-year-old year and even fewer start their three-year-old year. It did appear that when a mare was retired or pulled off the track, there was some significance about that. Statistically speaking, there was significance, and it corresponded with her trainer. This is likely due to a breeding program being in effect, that mares are often going to be pulled sooner because it's time for them to go on and breed and produce other racehorses.
Yeah.
The age at first start and how well the horse performed during the first year of racing were significant predictors of how long they raced. So if they did good their first year, then they were going to continue to race. If they did bad their first year, regardless of age, they weren't going to continue to race. They do find that, to conclude, that those that first started at 2 years of age were less likely to stop racing than horses that first started at three. So if you start at two, you're more likely to continue racing. Those that start at three are more likely to stop racing sooner. Okay, that's their conclusion. They do a bunch of analysis, which we'll get into in just a second. I just want to compare these two studies first and then answer a bunch of questions about them. So the second study is the New Zealand one. And this is one, it's a 2011 study. This is the one that Chris Rogers is part of, as well as two other folks. It was published in the Equine Veterinary Journal. And it is the association of two-year-old training milestones with career length and racing success in a sample of thoroughbred horses in New Zealand. So I'm just going to read their conclusion to you first, because this is the line that gets quoted. Two-year-old training milestones had a strong association with positive racing career outcomes. Horses in training or racing as two-year-olds may have better musculoskeletal health throughout life than horses that are first in training or racing at a later age. The thing is, that statement is true, but for a totally different reason than Chris says.
Okay.
And I'm just targeting Chris because he has a ton of these studies. He's obviously has partners in this. So basically what this study wanted to do was look at the why we're losing so many horses, why wastage is so high, and why so few horses are being bred, and they believe that that's tied to these when these milestones are being reached. So they looked at the 2011 or 2001 to 2002 full crop, and this consisted of 4,683 horses. There was actually more, but they got pulled because they weren't ever going to race. They went on to other things. They were already injured. So there was 4,683 horses. About half of those, a little less than half, were males, and a little bit more than half were females. So of those, 3,152, or 67%, were registered as racehorses. Then of that total, 56 went on, 2,661 went on to train. And then of that, 2,100 went on to race. So 45% made it on to a racing career. So that's a huge amount of wastage already.
Yeah.
So they track these horses in that 2001-2002 full crop till their seven-year-old season year. And that was about 29,000 races. There were about 32% of horses that were never registered with a trainer, another 43% that never trained, and another 55% that never raced. That's just the reverse of what I just said.
But so all these horses have different trainers, right? It's not just they're being put through the exact same program or anything?
Correct. This is just all the thoroughbreds that were born that year and then went on to race and flat racing. So they are just looking at – so this is just like an example because, right, this study was done and published in 2011. So they just went back in time and looked at all the records that the Racing Association had. So they didn't have access to a lot of information, but they did have access to, you know, the age, lineage, the trainer, their career winning start. They had all that information. So they found that horses that were at 2 years when they first raced were significantly less likely to retire from racing, which indicates that they're more likely to have more race starts and more years racing. So they did find that the number of race starts was maybe a better measurement of the horse's career and success than number of years raced, which I think is really interesting because you could have a horse that has a lot of starts in their like 2 or 3 year old year, but then doesn't continue on. And you're saying that indication of a good career than them racing for 7 years, like that means something, that they're getting burnt out a lot faster. Like, I don't know what that means, but that is an interesting finding.
Yeah, I don't like that.
What really upsets me with this study in particular is that he did not provide any data. He provided several tables, and all the tables he's provided are basically the answers to his statistical equations. He does not break this down in, he does not provide the data. It's extremely common for researchers to provide some form of data so you can track what's happening. He only provides tables as in outcome of races. Here's the coefficient. It's -0.044. The SE is 0.0054. The p-value is 0.0001.
Like, that means nothing. Yeah, that means nothing to me.
Like, it means nothing to me. The one table, table one that he provides, breaks down when horses first hit that milestone. So, for example, at 3 years old, 871 horses first were registered. So they weren't registered with a trainer prior to that. But then you go on and 919 horses first trained for racing when they were three. But I don't know of that breakdown how many three-year-olds exited, two-year-olds that were registered the previous year but didn't start training to this year. Like, that doesn't give me any breakdown of the information. It's, I think he's doing something fishy. And I continue to think he's doing something fishy because I have a lot of questions from this study. The first is that injuries were not reported or factored in his study, which is sort of why we're here. Like, this is study is about reducing musculoskeletal injuries. If you're not documenting when horses left due to injuries or when horses were delayed due to injury, you're really not answering that question you said you set out to answer.
Right. If you're trying to look at wastage in the industry, injuries are that wastage.
Yes, it's a huge part of that wastage. So that was really frustrating. Also, both studies seem to indicate that trainer had some impact, but in New Zealand, they didn't look at it. So trainer was the trainer the horse was registered at the time, and they could have changed trainers. There could have been different programs. What they were finding was that trainers had some sort of impact, but they couldn't quantify it in the statistical analysis for New Zealand. And then in the Polish study, they found that when mares and females were pooled, or males and females were pooled, the effect of the trainer on career longevity was found to be significant. Namely, an increased professional experience of the trainer, which was determined by how many horses that trainer had, was associated with a longer racing career of that horse. So if you had a trainer that had more horses, they were more likely to continue to race all of those horses, where if you had a smaller trainer, he was more likely to retire horses sooner. Also, owners that trained their own horses were also likely to retire them sooner. So horses and were likely to hold those horses longer before they started. Neither study, well, the Polish study does account for it, but the New Zealand one doesn't, that mares tend to retire sooner so that they can go on to breed. But they also just aren't as good as colts when it comes to racing. And I'm so sorry, mare fans. I'm a huge mare fan, huge mare person. But the Polish study found that sex had a significant impact on career longevity. The hazard ratio for career duration in males versus females was confirmed that males had a higher probability of a longer career, and that mares were pulled for breeding purposes, as well as they were consistently slower during competition. They just didn't race as fast as colts, so they were going to be pulled out.
Okay.
So the final piece that the Polish study actually discusses, but that the New Zealand study leaves out, is that the fact why horses are likely to retire. So other factors contributing to the loss of horses between these milestones may be lack of ability, injury, death, or financial impact to owners, that they're just not winning enough and the owners can no longer pay for them. In the Polish study, they did talk about a unequivocal relation between racing performance of the horse and the duration of its racing career. There is greater chance for better horses to have a longer racing career. So horses that were better trained, better bred, better conformation, easier to train, were likely to race longer than those that didn't have those qualities.
And none of that has anything to do with starting young horses.
None of that. It has to do all the way back with quality of horse entering. And the reason horses are being delayed, the delay in the first start of three-year-olds was probably caused by health problems or immaturity, skeletal immaturity. Horses that began their careers earlier had a superiority over those that began later. So you had quality horses entering their two-year-old year and continuing, where those that were held till three, and remember, it's 12% in that New Zealand study, weren't quality horses. If they had been, they would have been racing at two.
Right, so it doesn't account for that.
Exactly. So that the thoroughbred studies do not, that are quoted, do not account for that horse's quality. They don't account for the quality of the horse. But Chris Rogers, that New Zealand study, says that it's because the horses are less likely to be injured if you start them younger. But you didn't track injuries. So how can you say that?
Yeah, that's really dumb.
The reason they're less likely to have injuries, even if that's true, is because they were better horses to begin with.
And that's so frustrating because this is a study that gets referenced all the time in the midst of Facebook arguments.
All the time. Dr. Latcher even talks about these studies and says that the thoroughbred industry is a perfect, a golden standard for when to start a young horse.
I think not.
Right? We want 55% wastage. And totally unrelated, I did, out of curiosity, want to know what wastage rates were like in other disciplines, because I actually think they're probably higher than I realize. I found a paper by Chris Rogers looking at wastage in inventing horses. And you know what? He's able to recognize there that it's going to be quality of horse is the reason for early retirement.
Huh.
He recognizes it in the eventing world, but can't recognize it in the racing world. Because you know who paid for this study?
Who?
The New Zealand Racing Board.
Oh. Well, that would make sense as to the conclusion they drew.
If people quote the thoroughbred study at you and they tell you that, oh, it's better if you start your horses at two than at three because they have longer careers, it's just not true. It has to do with the quality of horse you began with, not the quality. Like, that quality is going to stay with you regardless.
Which is funny because the first study that I cover, when I was looking, I was specifically looking at bone density, actually has something very similar to the conclusion that your thoroughbred study drew.
So that is the thoroughbred study. I am going to hand it over to you.
Okay.
Because we could be here all day talking about the thoroughbred studies and injury papers, because there's a whole set of injury studies about how two-year-olds are actually more likely to be injured than three-year-olds. We could be here all day. Because there is a lot on this topic, which is awesome. But also the conclusions be whack.
Yes. So what because like this episode, we're specifically looking at things that people kind of bring up in various Facebook arguments, or just like kind of the most common reasons people give for either why they wait to start their horses or why they start their horses early. The one that I was looking at specifically was bone density, or as it's referred to in research studies, bone mineral density. And in its simplest terms, it is used to measure the strength of a bone and is taken into account when looking at a bone strength strain test that evaluates how a bone performs under strain, stress, and force that can foster bone deformation. However, bone density is just one measurement you take when evaluating the overall strength of a bone, and it is not the only indicator of strong bones. So I often see people referring things of like, well, if the horse's bone is denser, that means they have a stronger bone. Or if like there was no change, that means this exercise doesn't hurt them. When in reality, it's just one factor to the strength of the bone. It's not the end all be all that someone presents it to be. The first study I looked at was called the Changes in the Third Metacarpal Bone and Frequency of Bone Injuries in Young Quarter Horses During Race Training. Their goal of this was to take a look at young quarter horses being started under race training and seeing what impact that training has on a young horse's bone density in their cannonbone and how did that bone change. So the study they're talking about, the third metacarpal is the cannonbone. What they did in this study was they took 53 quarter horses who were put into race training at 18 months, which is 1.5 years old. They then monitored changes in the horse's cannonbone by radiographic densitometry, which measures the bone loss. And they took these measurements at 83 days prior to the start of training, then at day zero when they kicked training off, day 62 of training, day 104, and day 244 of training. At the end of this study, this really ties back into tracking injuries. At the end of the study, only 28 horses out of that 53 remain uninjured.
Wow.
15 of those horses suffered bone-related injuries. 10 suffered non-bone-related injuries, which was soft tissue damage. And since we're specifically talking about bone density and how starting young horses affects their bones, 4 of those 15 horses that were injured with bone-related injuries suffered buck shins. 4 horses suffered carpal fractures, which are chips. 4 other horses suffered a fractured sesamoid. 2 horses suffered fasciitis, which is swelling around the growth plates of certain long bones in young horses. So that'd be the cannonbone or the tibia. And then 1 horse suffered osseous enlargement of the second metacarpal, which is essentially a splint on the splint bone. Not great. That's a pretty high injury rate, right? You started off with 53 horses, only 28 horses made it out of the study uninjured. And those injuries I was just listing of injuries to their bone, those are pretty significant, especially in a young horse. Those are significant.
I mean, those are the injuries, though, that are listed for, like, those are your growth-related injuries.
Yes. Yes, those are. The workload these horses were started under was they began with traditional ridden race training for the first 9 weeks they were put into training. So that included lunging, riding, and driving in a round pen. Following that, they had an 8-week conditioning period where the horses were ridden 3 days a week. And then on alternating days, they were put on the mechanical hot walker. And each week included different sprints the horses would run. And so in the beginning, they would gallop them a shorter distance. And so the first week where they introduced the horses into sprints, per ridden day, they would run that shorter distance. They would sprint that once, and then they would cool the horse down, get off. The second week, they would lengthen out their galloped sprint distance, and they would run the horses through that twice, and then cool them down, hop off. And it just progressively increased in intensity. Their conclusion and what they found at the end of this was that for the measurements they took at day 83, which was 83 days prior to the start of training, and day zero when training started, normal increase in density of the cannonbone due to growth and mineralization was seen. And of course, that's going to happen. These are young horses. Their bodies are continuously growing, and that was reflected in their radiographs. From day zero to day 62, bone density decreased and remained low all the way until day 104. Somewhere in between day 104 and day 244, those scans they took, bone density increased once again. What was happening here is that these bones were going through modeling and remodeling. Bone modeling and remodeling occur at the same time in young horses due to their skeletal system still growing, obviously. But modeling primarily impacts the amount of bone present, and remodeling of the bone replaces the immature bone growth with mature growth. And I'm going to quickly go through the remodeling process that a bone goes through, because this pattern of growth is important and indicates when a horse is more likely to be at risk of an injury than not. It's very similar to the way of when you start working out your muscles, they get the little micro tears. Obviously, you don't work out too hard. That way, you're sore the next day, but your muscles are able to repair themselves. But if you were to go too strenuously when your muscles are still sore, you're at risk of pulling something or tearing something. So remodeling goes through three different phases. The first phase is resorption, which is when the breakdown and assimilation of old bone occurs. This lasts about 30 days. So while this occurs, the bone density decreases as porosity, which is void space of the bone not occupied by bone tissue, increases. This increase in porosity results in a decrease in bone strength, which increases the strain or deformation which the bone undergoes when a load is applied. The second stage of bone remodeling is the reversal stage, and this lasts about a week, which is where the surface is generated for new bone cells to be laid and is developed. The third stage of bone remodeling is the formation stage, which can last up to 3 months as the body replaces the same amount of bone which was previously in that location. So this pattern of demineralization and remineralization shows that when the bone is in a vulnerable demineralized state, injury rates practically skyrocket, which is why they saw a majority of those bone-related injuries occur between the day zero and day 104 when bone density was at its lowest. By the end of the study, between day 104 and 244, the level of exercise and strain the horses were undergoing was at its heaviest, but no bone-related injuries were suffered. So what they concluded from all of this was that exercise can be handled so long as the rate of healing and modification the bone goes through, which is the modeling and remodeling, is not overcome. As workload increases, the bone must remodel itself to accommodate new forces it previously has not encountered. But clearly, heavy race training and heavy work would and did overcome the bone's threshold to repair itself, which is where we saw 15 horses succumb to bone-related injuries.
So how many horses? 15 had, or how many horses were injured total?
25.
Oh, 25. Okay. Because, like, that is, just to point out, like, just under 55%. That is the amount of wastage. And I was just curious, like...
Yeah, no. Not a great rate of, like, not injury. Only, like...
Those numbers match.
Just over 50% of horses actually made it through uninjured.
Nice.
Yeah, not the greatest to take away. So it was just kind of funny that, like, their takeaway was, like, exercise can be handled so long as it's, like, not over the bone's threshold. But I'm sitting here thinking, you know, you had 25 horses get injured. I think you were over that threshold.
Yeah, no, they were. Those 25 were over. Those other 25 must have been under, which is, like, how do you know as a person, as an owner, which horse can take it and which horses can't?
Well, they concluded at the end of it was that the horses that started off already with a greater bone density in certain parts of their bones and showed that their bones repaired quicker than the other horses were at less risk of injury, which is, like, no duh. So once again, we're back to that whole thing of, like, better bred horses or horses that are better off to begin with are less likely to be injured. Just to kind of wrap things up quickly here, the second study I looked at was called The Mild Exercise Early in Life Produces Changes in Bone Size and Strength, but Not Density in Proximal Phalangeal, Third Metacarpal, and Third Carpal Bones of Foals, published in 2011. Sorry, that one's title is a real mouthful, but essentially their goal was they were taking a look at how age and different exercise regimes would impact various bone parameters on young horses. And this is actually one of my, I like this study probably the best because they looked at the greatest number of things and they also accounted for horses' age and how that impacts the bone growth that they're looking at. Even though I did like this study in that aspect, I did not appreciate them and the fact that for this study, these foals were specifically bred and born for it, which means they were also euthanized for this study so that they could look at their bone and tissue growth.
Yeah, that's always the worst part.
Yeah.
When they have to be euthanized for study. Ugh, I hate. This is why I hate research, but also like research, but also hate it.
So what they did in this study was they took a group of 33 thoroughbred foals that were scanned 5 different times between the ages of 3 weeks old to 17 months old. They were measuring bone mineral content, bone area, parasodal circumference in diaphyseal bone and cortisol thickness, volumetric mineral density, and bone strength. They took these scans from part of the horse's knee, top of the cannon bone, 2 sections from the middle of the cannon bone shaft, which one was a little bit higher, one was a little bit lower, the bottom of the cannon bone, and the midway point of the long pastern bone. In the study, they used a lot more technical jargon for it. I broke it down easily so you knew which I was talking about.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Yes. I do what I do for my people. 12 of these 33 foals were euthanized at 17.8 months of age, so just a little over a year and a half, and had their tissue harvested to be analyzed. The remaining horses were trained and raced as 2 and 3-year-olds. They had two groups of horses. One group was the controlled group, and they exercised spontaneously in the pasture. They just had foals turn loose, and the foals would, you know, get a little bee up their bottom and run around the pasture, and that's what they called exercise for the day.
That's exercise. That's hard work when you're a foal.
Oh, I'm sure it is. You know, you're experiencing everything new, something scary. You gotta run.
Yeah, you've gotta run around when you get out on grass. Like, if you aren't running when you get out in the pasture, are you even a foal?
Yeah, what are you doing? The second group received the same pasturing living conditions, but on top of that, they also received mild conditioning. For the scans they performed, they would put the horses under anesthesia, and they took cross-sectional scan slices that were 2 millimeters thick. At the first scan, there was no significant difference between the two groups for any of the bone parameters they were checking out. But from the second scan on, they noticed significant changes in all bone parameters of those being exercised. The most significant changes and increase was seen from the scans taken from the lower middle part of the canine bone on the horses experiencing conditioning. There was also an increase in bone mineral content, which was bone density, bone area, and strength strain index, which is what they use to show the resistance a bone has to lateral, torso, palmar, and torsional deformation. Yet the scans that were taken from higher up in the middle of the canine bone only saw a significant effect of strength strain index. So even though they were taking samples at the same time from the same bone, just like different parts of it, you saw completely different bone parameters being affected, which goes to say that if a bone is increasing in density, doesn't necessarily mean it's increasing in density uniformly throughout the whole bone.
Well, part of that, right, was the base. We know that those stop growing sooner, so you wonder if those also thicken sooner as well. And most bones are just thicker at the bottom than they are at the top. That's how they're designed, created. So it's an interesting question.
Their conclusion was that they were able to show a significant difference in two groups of foals with certain bone parameters in certain spots, but these differences were not present at all sites where scans were being taken. So it's just a way for them to say that, like, we saw a significant difference in 2 out of the 6 areas we were looking at. For instance, they saw the biggest changes in the scans taken from the middle of the long pasture bone. They saw a change in bone area, bone mineral content, strength strain index, and cortisol thickness, which is the denser outer layer of the bone, were all greater in the exercise group than the group just out on pasture. But that was like the biggest area, that was the biggest part they saw a change in. All the other bones, they were like, eh, there's not really that much of a difference. And they also made a note that, you know, even though you saw the greatest change in that middle long pasture bone, that the increase in strength strain index, which is how you determine the strength of the bone, was not from an increase in the bone mineral density. It was due to changes in dimension of the bone. They had a stronger bone, but the density didn't change.
And you just still wonder how much of that is age. Like, they are still growing and thickening and nutrition. Like, there's so many. It's so hard to say that it's exercise, I feel like.
Well, this study, they did a really good job of addressing what the differences were due to age and how they were separating that out to, so they accounted for age in this study, and then these changes you saw were because of the exercise, not because of the changes in age.
Okay.
So they're like, these are the changes you saw because of age, these are the changes we saw because of exercise.
Gotcha. Okay, that's nice that they at least recognize that.
But yeah, they're one of the only studies that did that. So all in all, they concluded that brief, mild exercise in young horses is beneficial in increasing bone resistance of bone deformation, and that the spontaneous exercise the pasture group threw in themselves, so while we saw that there was some differences in those getting exercise, foals just out on pasture, that was sufficient to stimulate initial bone development and maturation, similar to that of the group receiving structured exercise. So turning your foal out and your horses out in pasture when they're young and developing is just as beneficial as subjecting them to mild exercise. Also, these are like really young horses. The oldest of the horses they were taking scans of were 1.5 years.
Yeah, I found another literature review that I didn't include in my notes that looked at all the studies, and one of their conclusions was that pasture training and sprint was the same. Like, just letting the horse be out in pasture and sprint workouts were the same. So you could do sprints, it's fine. It's like, but you could also just leave them in the pasture. Like, if you think those are the same, have the same level of impact and change to the body, then why don't you do the one that causes less injuries?
And on the flip side of that, confinement to young horses inhibits musculoskeletal development. Just it overall inhibits their ability to develop to prevent injury. So confining your horses is definitely not the best option out there.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of the research skips that. They're like, don't lock your horses up in a stall, so sprint training's good. And it's like, whoa, there's some middle ground in there.
Right, and I have another study that kind of goes into that. Their conclusion is very, what the heck? But at the end of this study, this last one, they also made a footnote concluding that bone mineral density should not be used as an outcome measurement when examining a mild exercise program. They say this is because throughout all the scans they took of the two groups of foals, there was significant difference in it due to imposed exercise. The regions of bone that could enlarge did so in response to like the strain and stress stimulus they were undergoing, thereby increasing their resistance to deformation without increasing the bone tissue density. I mention this because the next study we're going to take a look at looks specifically and only uses bone density to determine if the effects of exercise on foals is good or bad. And also, the next study, they don't take into account age.
So I had one thought before we move on to the next study with this one, is that if you're taking bone slices, you're doing some type of surgery, and then you're medicating, what type of impact does that have on the horse's remodeling, right? Like that has to cause some sort of impact now that your horse has this injury or had this surgery. And it's just like, I understand that this is the best way, quote, to do the research, but you also wonder like what variables you introduced in that process.
Right. And it's also so hard because the oldest horses they were looking at were a year and a half.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And that they mentioned that all the other horses went on to race as 2 and 3 year olds. But the horse's life doesn't end at like 3 or 6 years old. The horse's life should, in theory, extend all the way out until their mid-20s. Like, arthritis is a part of life, but it shouldn't be a part of a 10-year-old's life. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And that's a huge gap in all of these studies, is they are just looking at those first few years. And most horses are healthy their first few years, regardless of what happens, you know, in the beginning. To me, it's really, the question is, do I get to ride my horse until they're 19 or do I get to ride my horse until they're 29? That should be the question we're trying to answer. And I think the research fails miserably at that, at answering that question.
It's more like ride your horse till 15 based off of these studies. Like they are showing, a lot of them are looking at, does this make the horse stronger in the short term of our goals versus like the long-term health effects it has on them, which is so hard because I know running a study like that would be incredibly expensive to monitor these horses throughout like their entire lives. But I think it's necessary if we're going to be discussing starting horses at younger ages. Like, how does that affect them?
Absolutely. Chris Rogers, that study he did where he compared horses to humans, he puts horses in the geriatric out the door at 15. He's personally capping their, and I understand that, yes, after, you know, horses are no longer in their prime at 15, but to equate them, you know, there's still a lot of life left, hopefully, in a 15-year-old. And to say that they're geriatric, like literally geriatric's the word he used, is, you know, a challenge for me. Like, I don't understand, but ride them at 2.
It's definitely not the right mentality I want of someone concluding that they're geriatric by 15, but you can ride them at 2. Not the right mentality. So the last study I'll quickly cover before we wrap everything up is called The Effects of Age, Exercise, and Growth Rate on Bone Mineral Density in Third Carpal Bone and Distal Radius in Warm Blood Foals with Osteochondrosis. Their goal essentially was to look at a group of foals ranging from 5 to 11 months old who received a varying exercise and how this impacted bone mineral density in essentially one of the bones they're looking at in the horse's knee. They hypothesized that mineral density would be higher in the 11-month-old foals than it was in 5-month-old foals, which, yeah, because they're not even accounting for age. So obviously an 11-month-old is going to be bigger than the 5-month-old horse.
Makes sense.
What they did in this study was they took 3 groups of warm blood foals that for the first 5 months of their lives had experienced different exercise programs. So one group from like 0 to 5 months old had been confined strictly to box stalls with no exercise program at all. They were just in a box stall. Another group had been confined to box stalls with an exercise program introduced to them. And the third group had free exercise at pasture. Half of these horses were euthanized at 5 months old. And from there, they're split into 2 remaining groups by age. But from 5 to 11 months old, even though they're split into 2 groups because of age, they were all kept in the same living environment, which was a box stall with access to a small paddock for 2 hours per day. When the horses hit 11 months old, the rest of them were euthanized for analysis. What they saw was that the horses that were kept on box stalls all the way up until 5 months and then put into a box stall with access to a paddock had the quickest rate of growth for bone density all the way up until 11 months. But their bone density ended at about the same rate that those horses who had been turned out loose, who had then had to be confined to a box stall with only 2 hours access to a paddock per day.
So that study is so confusing because wouldn't we think that the box stall with 2 hours of turnout may be a bigger indicator of whether they can be, like, of health? Like, you're saying that we're no longer moving you around. You're all going to come and live inside for all day and then be out for 2 hours. We all even out. Is that good or is that bad? Like, that doesn't tell me if you're, like, healthy or not. It tells me that maybe this living condition isn't the best.
And this study is used to justify starting horses young because they introduce some of them from 0 to 5 months old into an exercise program. And then they're like, well, look, it all levels out with the horses that were confined in a box stall. So it doesn't really matter what you do to them when they're young, which that is not the right conclusion to take away from that. I think the conclusion was,
no,
let's not keep foals in box stalls because it clearly inhibits the bone density, like the growth of their bones.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sorry, but running a five-month-old or running a foal around in a field is definitely not the same as starting them under saddle.
Right, and it's used for that.
Those are not the same things.
It's used to justify starting horses under saddle, but you're only looking at a 5 month to like 11 month old horse. That's not the age any of us are looking at to start a horse, or at least none of us should be looking at to start a horse.
Yeah, no, please don't be looking at that age. That's real inappropriate.
Please don't ride your 5 month old. I think my conclusion overall is that you need to be aware, just like the same strain your muscles go through when you start working out, when you have it, that bones will kind of go through the same thing and that you have to give them time to recover and reacclimate themselves to the additional strain and stress you're introducing. And that the one study that showed mild exercise is productive and beneficial to a young horse's life, the key word is mild exercise. It is not these young event horse classes that we see that are promoting 3-year-olds looking like fully developed 8-year-olds.
Yeah, I think conditioning is probably like the outcome most people should be taking away, that movement is great. And nobody that says wait to ride your horse till they're 4 means to just leave them in a stall. I feel like that's the alternative argument. People are like, well, leaving them in a stall for 4 years is bad and not handling them or haltering them is bad, so you should ride them at 2. And it's like, those aren't the same thing. It's not what I'm saying. It's not one or the other.
No, not at all the same thing. Like starting to lunge your 2-year-old and like taking them out on in-hand trail rides and like trotting them in hand and stuff, that is beneficial to them. That is going to develop their bone density a little bit more, and that is going to help their body change and accommodate. You know, it's just going to help them grow and be a little bit healthier than if they just stood around in the pasture all day. And then if you want to slowly start introducing your weight to their back, do it like once for 10 to 15 minutes and then hop off. And, like, only do that maybe once a month. But that's probably when they, like, get to 2.5 or 3 or so. Like, this isn't you're getting on a 3-year-old and schooling them for an hour at a time. This is you're getting on a 3-year-old and you're walking them for, like, 20 minutes and then you're hopping off.
Yeah. I think that's truly, like, the biggest takeaway is that you can start a 2.5-year-old. And, I mean, 2-year-olds, like, not 18-month-olds that are called 2-year-olds, like, full 2-year-olds.
Yes.
Or a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old. But you either are conditioning them while you're under saddle and you're putting in the same sort of effort that they would be putting in the pasture, which is they're not, you know, drilling skills in the pasture. They're meandering, they're long and low grazing, they're running, they're doing a mix of things, but they're not training. You're either doing that when you get on them at 2.5, 3, whatever, or you're going to give them a little bit more time in the pasture so they can build some of that muscle and some of that foundation themselves. And then you can start riding and training a little bit more when they're older.
Right. That's exactly it. And so I think we got this twisted when we started saying, however many years ago, people started saying they could start 2-year-olds. I mean, yeah, I guess you can with mild exercise, but what you can't do is drilling those schools and start expecting a 2-year-old to carry themselves a certain way and to be able to balance both their weight and your weight and all the other things that go in with asking them more complicated questions in the schooling ring.
Yeah, and A common argument against the thoroughbred studies that I hear is that thoroughbreds are not well-trained horses. You know, they are trained to run around and pull in the bit and run hollow. And, you know, we should be looking at dressage horses or, you know, Western horses. We should be looking at a different discipline because racing is not a very balanced, for the best word, or relaxed discipline. And I don't know that that's necessarily true. Like, I do know that some race trainers spend a lot of time making sure that they have a trained horse before they start racing them, and some absolutely do not. So I don't know that that's necessarily the reason why there's a 55% loss in the thoroughbred industry. I don't know if that's the answer. It's just the style in which they're trained either. I do think they train too hard. Like, I'll be honest, I think that's too much for most two-year-olds.
Those studies show that, especially with the injury rate being roughly 50%. Yeah. That's too high for that level of exercise.
Yeah, that's way too high. And I know people will argue also that, like, oh, thoroughbreds then go on to have other careers, right? They have a second career as a dressage horse or a venter or a barrel horse. But people who are buying those thoroughbreds are not buying well-used thoroughbreds. They're buying lightly used, uninjured thoroughbreds. Most people don't want to buy a thoroughbred and rehab it for a year just to find out in a year if it's maybe going to do low-level eventing. That's not the career path most second chance thoroughbreds are on.
That's exactly it. Well, then I guess for you, you have Hudson, who is, how old is he?
He is 2.5 right now. He'll be 3 in April.
Okay, so then are you going to... What are your plans for him? Are you going to ride your 2-year-old, your 2.5-year-old?
So we have started introducing weight to him and climbing up on the mounting block and laying all over him. We're going to kind of focus the next few months on aids so that when I do go to get on him, he kind of knows what stop and turn and some of that stuff means.
Yeah.
But I think I'll likely be getting on him at 3. It's kind of going to be up to him. Like, that's the other big piece of this, is that I need him to be relaxed enough with what's going on that I'm not fighting through his tension trying to condition and teach him. You know, I want him to be relaxed, and if he's relaxed, then we'll walk a lap, and if he's relaxed for 2 laps, we'll walk 2 laps. So that's kind of going to be my measurement right now, is how relaxed is he and how much can he comfortably do. And I recognize that horses were not designed to be ridden, so that's a huge thing, is that you can't get on a horse and just go. They have to develop muscles so that they can hold a rider. Yeah. Because their back and spine was designed to hold their guts. Like, their digestive system is extremely heavy, and their spine was designed to hold that, not a rider. So there is a lot of conditioning that I think people quickly overlook, because the horse really can't protest and whine and moan like your child can when you make them exercise or do PE. Like, they don't whine about it as much. So I think it's sometimes quick, we can be quick to overlook some of those things and forget about them.
Are you going to start jumping your 3-year-old?
Definitely not. Definitely not. I did, when he was like 18 months, I did post a video of him hopping over a half barrel jump I had. And I got some people on like Facebook were like, how old is he? Why are you doing that? I was like, okay, horses can jump. They can jump at any age. He is literally, like, it's an obstacle. Like, as a foal, he is going to have to learn how to navigate an obstacle. Am I going to do jump training and expect him to jump height?
Right.
No. He has jumped twice since I've had him. He's, like, 2.5, and I've on purpose jumped him twice over, like, 1 foot. It's more just about, like, an obstacle and being coordinated. So there is that balance. Like, that I think is fine, and maybe I'm crazy and maybe I'm wrong.
No, I agree.
But it's not the drilling repetitiveness of, you know, grids.
I 100% agree. Is it doing mild conditioning or like just introducing them to something and then not drilling it, or like you asked him to, you know, jump a singular tiny jump one time and then haven't like reintroduced it to him for a couple of months? That is fine. That's like, that's okay.
Yeah. And I think it's great, especially when they're young, to introduce them to all of these new things in small doses, because the more they see as a young horse, the better prepared they'll be for it as an older horse. But again, it's not drilling. It's not training. It's, hey, look, there's a log in the woods. Let's walk over it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening to our entire episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have comments, questions, concerns, do not hesitate to reach out to us either on Instagram at inthebarn.pod or at Gmail at inthebarnpod@gmail.com. And be on the lookout for the episode coming up after this one. It's going to be really good. It's about the one the only, George Morris. And we are diving deep into his story.
Yes, and we were like reading so much. That's what I'm saying. I don't have time for TikTok because I am reading so much about George Morris, which has been terrifying.
It's awful. You will,
that's your hand. Yeah, that's all.
I don't want to spoil any of it. You will want to listen to that episode because, oh my God, why were we ever told this was a good horseman?
Yeah. Everything you thought you knew, you're about to, you were wrong. You've been lied to for a very long time if you ever looked up George Morris.
So on that pleasant note, stay safe, stay classy, and stay in the saddle.
Or stay out.
Yeah, you know, it's up to you. You make your own judgment.
Light riding, mild exercise, up to you.